start making a little bit of a shift here. We're going to be talking about real and ideal work today. And our community has been writing these wonderful parables, which are just pretty amazing. So I want to share this one with you. It's called The Parable of the Prodigal Talent. A widowed man had three sons. A dedicated father, he worked hard and sacrificed much to provide well for them. Determined that they succeed, he pressed them to develop their skills and talents and focused on their education in order to help them be accomplished. Before he knew it, his sons were gone, but he was pleased that he had successfully launched them into the world. The oldest showed great interest and ability in science from an early age. He became a surgeon who helped save many lives. Driven by ambition, he worked long hours and became quite wealthy. The second son had a bit of an identity crisis, as middle children often do, but he had a way with young people and became a skilled middle school teacher. His income was much smaller than his older brother's, but he loved teaching, was loved by his students, and felt content with his life. The third son could almost be described as the runt of the litter. Always the most sensitive, a bit on the fragile side, somewhat lost in the limelight of his older brothers, still he showed great promise in school. Not as clear as his siblings about his purpose in life, he set off on a path that seemed right. But when it did not work out, never quite found another direction. He worked different jobs, never really forging a career. He struggled financially, but took comfort in his hobbies and passions. He had a way with a camera, able to capture beauty in the most ordinary circumstances, and a way with wood, delighting friends with his whimsical carving. Hardly able to believe he had a gift, he remained too shy to risk exposure beyond his circle of family and friends who were deeply impacted by the soulfulness in his photos and carvings that he shared with them. Eventually, the father became gravely ill, so all three sons came to be with him during his final days. The oldest son, proud of the way his life had turned out, felt he had magnified his father's investment in him and his education. The oldest son, proud of the way his life had turned out, felt he had magnified his father's investment in him and his education a hundredfold. He expressed gratitude for what he had been given, and confident that he had fulfilled his father's wishes, also expected praise, which his father indeed gave him. The middle son also came confidently, pleased that he was worthy of his father's praise, even if he didn't make as much money as his older brother. He too was welcomed appreciatively. The youngest son, however, approached his father's bedside with trepidation. He had always been intimidated by his father's single-mindedness and success, embarrassed that he had so little to show for his life materially or career-wise, he braced himself for a scolding about how he had wasted his father's resources and succumbed to his fears. He also expected to be compared to his brothers, who he knew had a much wider impact on the world than he did. To his great surprise, instead of calling him a failure when he confessed his lack of achievement, his father embraced him most tenderly of all. "My son," he heard, "what I gave to you, I gave freely. I am not disappointed in you at all. Talent shared, even in small circles, still inspires others to seek beauty and to find their voice. Don't cast yourself into darkness by feeling like a failure. You too are my beloved, and I am well pleased." Let's pray. God, you gather us together to be your people, to dig into some of the real stuff of life, but to have a vision beyond the reality that sometimes we feel stuck in, sometimes we feel okay with. Have a vision for this ideal, not a pie in the sky, but something that you hold as precious, something that you hold as a goal, something that we can always reach for, something that is filled with grace, not demand. Help us to feel that today, and help us to take whatever you share with us through music, through company, through words, so that we may know a little bit more what it means to be your children. Be loved and told that you are well pleased with us. In your name we pray. Amen. Okay, do I have any time left? A few minutes. Okay, so we are diving into this area. We have been talking about the real and ideal this is our fifth week, and this is the last week before Easter. When we're going to talk about something that might not work. And we need you to come here and be a part of doing something that might not work. But we'll see. If we all do it, maybe it will. You never know. We're talking about real and ideal work today. All right. Now, work is such a big part of our lives. It gives us meaning. It has the power to do great and wonderful things in our world. It also drives us crazy. It burdens us. It drains us. It wears us out. We wonder when we can be done with it. It's just one of these really incredibly complicated things about us. And one of the assumptions that I'm afraid that we walk around with all the time is that work is just sort of like we all have to do. It's sort of like the subtext, that's always just going on in life that you kind of forget about, and you figure out, well, all the stuff that I'm really trying to be, the stuff I'm really trying to learn, is all kind of on top of all this base of work. And God says, no. This is part of who you are. I mean, everything that you're learning has got to dig right down into that. Your work, in some ways, is exactly who you are. So that's why we're digging into this. And I think this real and ideal issue really, really applies to work. Because the reality of the work that we do, I probably don't have to say too much about it. You've got your experiences with it. You know what it really feels like. And then there's all these ideas about, well, what is ideal work, and what do I want to do, and how come I don't make $17 million a year, and all those kinds of weird thoughts that are in there that completely pollute our ability to understand what we really do and the value of who we are and what we do. So we need to dig into this a little bit. That is what we're going to do here. I like kind of how Jesus starts talking out about this. By the way, if you pull out your Sunday paper and look on the back side, you'll find an outline and invite you to follow along on that. And by the way, I kind of bop back and forth. You bop back and forth. Say that carefully. There's the continuum at the bottom, and then there's some like fill-ins on the top, and I kind of jump all over. So you're smart people. You'll figure it out. So here's one of the things that we find in the Bible. I think, boy, these are some good words that tell us a little bit about work in our lives, okay? Paul's writing to an early congregation who's trying to figure out all this God stuff, all this Jesus stuff. And this is what he says. He says, there are different kinds of working, but the same God works all of them in all people. To each one, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for the common good. Now, there's an awful lot in those couple of lines there. One is this assumption that Paul has, that the early church has, that Jesus was trying to give people, that is so different than the assumption most of us have, and that for most of us is, well, work is just something you do. I mean, you just have to do it, so you do it, and then you do the other stuff when you get a chance. And he said, no. This work stuff that God is at work within us and putting within us, and that is a manifestation of the Spirit's work, of God's creative power within our lives, this is something God is giving you. This is part of God's work in your life, all right? The assumption is that this is a godly, divine sort of thing. It isn't mundane at all. And that's important. And then the other piece in there is, I love those last words. To each one, the manifestation of the Spirit, you're gifted to be doing some kind of work in this world for the common good. That's a purpose of your work. It's not about you. Somebody. So two things that we pull out of that, and you'll find this on the outline. And what is, like, what do we mean by work? When I say that, what do we mean by work? It's kind of a definition, okay? And work, when I say work, I'm not talking about your job. I'm not talking about your career. I mean, that is your work, all right? But just assume, as I'm talking today and I'm talking about your work and the things you do, I am not referring to your job, unless I explicitly say that that's what I'm referring to, all right? So just let's get that out of there. We do all kinds of things. We're engaged in all kinds of work that aren't related to our job. There's more subtleties than that. Okay, so what is it? It is your exertion of self. You're inputting yourself to the world. That's what your work is. You're exerting yourself. And that by yourself, I'm talking about your physical, your emotional self, your skills, your talents, your knowledge, your resources, I'm sure lots of other things. You're taking those and you're exerting them into the world, affecting the world and affecting other people. That is your work. That's a lot more than your job. In fact, there's a lot of jobs you can do without doing that, which is another sad story. But that's one piece, okay? So that's what we mean when we're talking about work, exerting your exertion of yourself. Second, why is this so important? Why is this a spiritual issue? And it's because of this, I think. There's probably a couple answers to this, but I think this is the one that's more important, the most important. And you hear it from us a lot here at Jacob's Well, and that was you are created to make a contribution. That is just innately who you are. You are created to make a contribution. That means the work that you do, the exertion of yourself to other people and to this world is really, really important. It's God's stuff. Now, that's a faith statement. I mean, the Bible just plainly has this as an assumption. It just, like, knows it. And it's interesting. People thousands of years ago just saw that. Human beings were created to make a contribution in this world. But, I mean, you don't need to look at the Bible for that. If you just look at it biologically, psychologically, intellectually, socially, we're hardwired for contributing, to making a difference, to touching the lives, to touching things, and feeling like what we did and our interface with the world is significant. It's doing something. Without that, we just fall apart. Our identity gets lost, and we question all those sorts of things. So we were created to make a contribution. Now, Jesus is obviously trying to help people understand what this is all about, and he says this, and this is from the Sermon on the Mount, these first few chapters of Matthew, Jesus' first teaching, at least as Matthew tells a story. And you hear us use this verse every time there's a baptism. Two Sundays from now, there are going to be two baptisms here in this well, and you're going to hear the sponsors, godparents of these children say this verse. What is it? You probably all recognize it. Let your light so shine before others. Actually, it backs up a few. You are the light of the world. So let your light so shine before others that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. You are the light of the world. You are meant to shine on the world. You don't just do that with your pretty smile, although we'll take that, you know. You do it through your work, the stuff that you do by exerting yourself into the world. And this is something that God calls out. It's something God is waiting for. God wants the world to see your good works, because that gives glory to your Father in heaven. What does that mean? Give glory? That's like a weird phrase. We don't use that word glory anymore. What does that mean? It's talking about, I think it says that God is delighted when God sees us do that. Why? It's not because God says, I want you to do that and, you know, I want you to obey me. God is saying, I created you with so much potential, so many gifts. I made you this brilliant light. And when you shine, it is so cool. God just loves it when you are that way. You know, it could be simple things. It could be big things. It can be things that draw lots of attention. It could be things that aren't even seen. But God knows the difference that they make. And God is delighted by that. I think that's what that's all about. And I think that's really important stuff. Work isn't about taking care of yourself, but it's one way that I take part in God's creation. I take part in God's creative presence, and God is still very busy creating through my work, right? Being that light. Okay, so what I want to do is pop you into this chart. It's called this continuum of real and ideal. And if you haven't been here with us, what this is, you know, we have this real, and unfortunately, the real part of our lives, we often are kind of ashamed of. We feel negative. We feel judged by it. We feel like it's just not good enough, and we don't know how to fix that. And one of the reasons is, over on this other side, I should do it the other way, we have this ideal that is just so bizarre, so idealistic, so, you know, like fantasy and dream come true, that there is no way, we can't ever figure out how to get our real, which is just kind of ugly and dumb and boring, ever like this ideal out here. And so we're just stuck. But those are unhealthy real and ideals. We aren't supposed to walk around with those. There's a different version. There's a healthy real that appreciates who we are and all the stuff we work with and the fact that we're not perfect and we don't do everything right. And that some of us, you know, we have a hard time with our attitude around those things. But there's also an ideal, though, that just kind of calls us forward. It will never quite get there, but that's not the point. We're not expected to. We're expected just to try to live in our real with a vision for what this ideal might be like, because it helps us know what to do next or how to make decisions and how to choose and, you know, what to try to live into. So that's what that's all about. And so I want to look at how that relates to our work. If I had a little more time, which I don't, what I would do is I'd say, well, okay, you kind of get this now. Write what you think your real and ideal, your unhealthy real and ideals are about work. Maybe this is a good project to do in group life or just to go do by yourself, all right? What's your unhealthy real and ideal about your work? Remember, big idea work, not just job work. And then what would be a really healthy real and ideal about your work, all your doings? And like, how does God talk about that? How does that fit with your perception of God and what you think God has to say about it. So let me walk you through some of them. I think you probably respond to these. This is pretty obvious. One of the things about our unhealthy real is our unhealthy real work is just have-tos. I have to do stuff I don't really want to do. That's my unhealthy real. You know, it's boring, it's hard, it's meaningless, at least way too much of the time. And most of all, I mean, really when you get into the pits of it is my work is unimportant. I don't have a lot of choice, so I have to do it, but my work is unimportant. Therefore, how do I feel about myself? Not real good. Not real good. Well, I'll get to that. Okay, so bop on the other side. I have to remember, I have to reverse. Okay, the ideal work, this unhealthy ideal work, is I don't have to work. I mean, that isn't ideally, wouldn't your ideal job be one you don't have to do, but you got paid for anyway? In fact, you got paid really well. You know, we have this fantasy about it, this. I don't have to do anything that I don't want to do. And it's exciting. It's easy. I can do it without trying. It all just comes naturally for me. That's my ideal work. There's not a lot of effort involved, which is kind of funny. Work and effort are actually the same word. So work that's not in, doesn't take any effort. There's something, you kind of know that there's something wrong with that phrase when you hear that. Say, you know, and so the person that feels like in the unhealthy real that my work is unimportant, the person who is the unhealthy ideal says, I'm a rock star. You know, just because of who I am, what I do, it's automatically valuable and wonderful, and how could anybody imagine life without me and what I do in this world? All right? Yeah, probably any of us could. You know, if you weren't there, we wouldn't notice. So, you know, that's kind of how all that fits. The healthy, all right, let's get rid of that. The healthy real and ideal, the ones in the center, are really the same thing. I think the real and the ideal are really the same thing. It's just that we deal with our real, and we kind of grow it into the ideal. So I think we use a lot of the same ideas for it. But I would say while the unhealthy real says I have to, and the unhealthy ideal says I don't have to, the healthy real says I'm okay with this. That's okay. Sometimes it's all right, I'm okay with this, you know? But it's really healthy. The healthy ideal says, I get to do this. That's the healthy ideal. I get to do this. It's one of our, when we started Jacob's Well, that was like every email, every letter I sent to anybody at the end, I said, we get to do this. I'm kind of reminding people, right? Quit complaining. You get to do this. Maybe I was just saying it to myself, trying to get myself to believe it. But the point is that I'm okay with this, and I try this vision that I get to do this, is that we get to choose. We're choosing our work. We're choosing to do it, whether we always like it or not, we choose it. In fact, that's one of the things we find is that, you know, that unhealthy real is hard over here. That unhealthy real is maybe too easy. And what we realize when we're in this healthy zone is it isn't a question of hard or easy. Those are actually the wrong question to ask, whether it's hard or easy. Sometimes work is hard. Sometimes work is easy. That's nice. When it's hard, that's okay, because what do? I do what I need to do something that I believe is important. And that's it, because those are the wrong questions to ask, hard or easy, or I like it or I don't like it, are the wrong questions to ask, because as we live in that healthy place of the real and ideal work, we come to this realization that my work matters. My work matters. Even if I don't always see the result of what I'm doing, the consequences, well, the difference that it makes down the line, but I'm doing it because I really believe it's the right thing to do. Sometimes it pans out, sometimes it doesn't. Like we're going to be talking about next week, it might not work, but by golly, I know it's the right thing to do, so I'm going to do it. My work matters. And it's a growing realization of that. We never quite get to that, okay? If you ever totally encompass that in your life, please come and tell me how you do it. But I think we get visions of it. We have moments of it. And that's what's really important about all of that. Then to kind of follow along, too, the experience when you're in this unhealthy real is that your work is draining. By the way, did I tell you to write little if you're actually trying to get this all in here? Because I got a lot of stuff. Sorry. I meant to say that like at the beginning. I could tell some of you were looking a little restless there. But this unhealthy real is draining on us. The unhealthy ideal is, I would say, indulgent. It's all about me. I love my work because it gives me everything I want. It isn't about the common good. It isn't about making a contribution. It's delivering me the world that I'm really, really like. And as long as I only think about me and my needs, I'm really, really happy. It doesn't work. That's unhealthy. The healthy, real, and ideal is all about understanding that this is fulfilling. I'm doing stuff that is fulfilling to me. And sometimes I have to bite a bullet to get there and have it be there, and I have to swallow hard. I have to really work at something without quite knowing how it's going to work and what it's all going to mean, but it's just fulfilling. So this is what I need to be about, and this is what I'm going to be doing. Now, one of the things that we really have to acknowledge, those people that are in that unhealthy reel, that are feel stuck, that are drained, that are doing meaningless, unimportant work to them, this is a social reality in our world. This isn't only just a spiritual or a mental, sociological problem that they're stuck with. This is actually, in our system, we do this to people. We do it to whole nations, probably, in some respects. There are people who are so exploited by other people in our world, and kind of overall, globally, we're kind of the exploiters, guys. What do we do with that? That may have more healthy conversations about that, maybe in the future. But there are people that are really forced to do work like that, that is simply exploited of them, that gives them no value, and that's a problem. Because one of the things we have to realize, not only are we thinking about our own work, but what about the work that we provide for others? Because we're an employer and we hire people? Because we're parents and we tell our kids what to do? Because we're a teacher and we have power over other people? Or because we're a consumer and we buy stuff? We need to think about that. Are we giving people meaningful work? Are we giving them an opportunity to be real selves through that? Or are we simply exploiting people and making them trapped in a place where they have very little that they can do about it? That's an important issue for us. So that's a big piece here. So what I want to do, I'm going to bounce back to the outline here, is there's two kinds of work. Two kinds of doings. There's work that expresses your shape, right? Work that expresses your shape, and I'll talk about that word shape in just a little bit, all right? And then there was work that you just got to do. You ever notice that? There's work you just like, this is really neat. I can really express myself and be myself when I do this. Anybody feel like that when they're washing dishes? You know, Katie does. Bring your dishes to Katie's house. Whether it's washing dishes, changing diapers, going to school, taking that algebra class or the requirement, the prereq for this course, or it's practicing, maybe it's exercising, but we do those things. Sometimes there's just stuff you got to do. And we need to reconcile ourselves to that. But the reason that we do it is because that allows us then to be able to do something later on. This is a reality of work, and I think we all know this, but it's a good thing to hear it. And so on here it says, both are necessary to help create the world that you truly want to live in. You need to do the things that express your shape. God made you a light in this world, and your light needs to shine brightly. All right, because this world needs that light in it. It needs you to be expressed. Your shape needs to be expressed. But there's some things that you just need to do. And there's some things I just need to do. In fact, that's quite a bit. But when we do that, when we do both of those, what we're doing is we're creating that world. In fact, I would call this, and I've been trying to get this language out here in the last couple of months more, is we help create the kingdom of God. All right, we're not making a utopia. We're not making paradise. We're not bringing heaven to earth. But when we do the work that we are shaped to, that expresses ourselves, and we do the work that we just have to do because it's time for me to step up the plate and to take care of something, we help bring God's love for people and respect for this world and value of all people to this world in very tangible ways, and that's important. That's important. We need to be able to do that. There's actually another way of thinking about this, too, in terms of I'm going to actually talk about your job or your career. People often take different tacks. Most of us say, well, I want to find a career that really expresses myself, that I really find myself in, and I like that. And that's great. I hope you have that. I really feel like I've got one of those. All right? But some people, well, even if you have one of those, guess what? There's some other work that you just have to do. I strained out the chairs here this morning. I do that pretty much every week. People just laughing at me because it's such a Greg thing. And it's my OCD part of my life is chairs at field school. And, but if for me to be able to be the pastor that I feel called to be, that I just love to be, where I think I express my shape, I have to take part in straightening chairs. That's okay. But sometimes people pick their own career. Sometimes people choose a job that they don't really care about that much. It doesn't express their shape, but it's what they need to do in order to earn a living and have security so that they can be about something that really, really is important to them that they know they'll never make a living at. Well, when I say this, there's one person that immediately comes to my mind. His name is Jim. When I was in college, every summer I worked at a millwork factory. They make windows and doors and stuff like this. I ran a warehouse and drove forklift around and stuff like that. And Jim was just like my favorite guy. He ran the big saw. I would deliver with my forklift like boards that were 3 inches thick and this wide and 20 feet long to him. Kind of forklift that, put them up in the saw, and this saw was like scary big and computerized, and he would run these through, and it would come out as dimension lumber that they would use for of these exotic woods for millwork stuff like that. And Jim was the coolest guy in the world. And did you always want to run a saw? I said, no, he's a bluegrass. He plays stand-up bass for bluegrass, and every night he's out playing in a band someplace, and he's good, but not good enough probably to make a living at it, right? So he has this job. But by the way, he kind of really loves wood and finds some satisfaction in that. And running the biggest saw in the factory, he also kind of had respect from people, and he sort of set the climate of the place to be respectful and kind and considerate of each other. And he found a way of playing both of those. But he found a career that was something he had to do in order to clear space in another part of his life to do what he really felt called to do. That's okay. I think probably most of us, it's a little bit of a combination. But, think about that. Give yourself space for that. You know, parents, if their kids grow up, allow them maybe to make that decision. It's kind of scary, but those are the kinds of things that we all are dealing with. This also applies to something that we talk about here at Jacob's Well a lot, and that is our M&M. You see this? Everybody knows what M&M is. We recommend that everybody have an M&M in their life. Which who can not like chocolate that doesn't melt in your hands, right? But an M&M is that we all should have a ministry within the church and a mission beyond the church. We don't organize this kind of stuff. Like even the World Vision, the Team World Vision, we don't organize that. Brad comes, talks. People decide to do it. They go do it. We publicize it, but we don't run it. Actually, Megan right here kind of runs it. She's our team captain, and she's looking for signups. So right there, redhead, short hair, third row. But we encourage everyone, you find your ministry, that one that expresses your shape, who you are. Like, why did God bring you into this community? If you aren't here, we're missing something. And if you aren't exercising your shape, your gifts here, then there's something about Jacob's Well that's incomplete. We need you in a ministry. But there's some ministries here that none of us are shaped for, but we have to just do them, like setting up the chairs. There's lots of different things, all right? It's not just around set up and tear down, but there's lots of things that just sometimes need to be done. The same thing with a mission in the world. We want everybody to say, God has shaped me this way, and it's called me this way, and I have this awareness and these abilities, and I want to make a committed difference in the world someplace. All right, don't wait for us to tell you what it is. Don't wait for us to make you sign up. I mean, great, go clean up Camp Hiawatha. That's not your mission. I mean, that's a mission for that day, and it's a very good thing to do. But where is the committed place where you are figuring out who you are and the stuff that you can do, or is the stuff that you have to do, and you're making a difference with it in the world? We need to do that. It might be something you're already doing, and you just never thought about it that way. Gee, I go to my kids' classroom twice a week. Maybe that's my mission in the world. Well, what changes about it when you realize, gee, maybe God called me to do that, and that's why I'm doing it? I mean, that could be a powerful transformation for you to realize it that way. Maybe really change the nature of your commitment and the way you see yourselves and what you're trying to do there. If you find you don't have something like that, maybe it's time to start finding it. If you don't know how to do that, talk to us. But, the secret to finding your ministry or your mission in the world is really simple. It's called try stuff. If it doesn't work, stop. And try something else, okay? It's very scientific, but it works every time. So that's that. So those are some important things for us. I've been talking then about this word shape quite a bit, and we do talk about this periodically, and I don't want to push it too far, but I do want to help you understand this, because I think our shape has a lot to do with our understanding ourselves, with our work, real and ideal. And shape comes from an acronym that I didn't make up, but it's just an acronym. I tend to be actually very skeptical of acronyms, but I like this one, right? So shape, the S in the shape stands for your spiritual gifts. Spiritual gifts. I'm like, what does that mean? What's a spiritual gift? But what I understand spiritual gifts are all these other things that we're going to be talking about is that because I see myself not just as a person with passions and abilities and a certain personality and experiences and stuff like that, but I see them as serving God. Well, what is the purpose that I understand where God is empowering me to use these? It gives me a whole different cast. If you go back to our last series about 3D, life in 3D, it's not only seeing your gifts, your abilities, and all that sort of stuff through the lens of your own practical, like, I get it, this is what I can do and stuff like that, but also looking at it through the lens where God is saying, this is how I see all of that. It's a 3D view of all that you are. When you put that together and realize what you can do with it, that's seeing yourself filled with spiritual gifts. And I think it's an important cast. It's a good letter to have out front. H, and it stands for your heart or your passions. It's too bad the word isn't spape, because that would work better. But shape, it's your heart. What do you have a real heart for? What really burns? What just can you, you know, this is when you're really in there, you're saying, yeah, I really do get to do this because this is fun. This is, I have energy for this all day long. Your A stands for your abilities, your skills, your talents, those things. What are you just able to do this better than other people? P stands for your personality. Our personalities give us a very specific shape. Some of your shapes are a little more specific than others, and that's okay. E is your experiences. How have your experiences? We underplay this. Experience isn't just college and training and careers and stuff like that. Experiences are this real stuff in life. You've heard us say a lot of times here that, you know, I believe our greatest ministries comes from our greatest hurts in our lives. We think that they come from our greatest strengths. I'm pretty well convinced from going through life with hundreds of people that our greatest ministries, our greatest workings into the world come out of the places where we have been hurt the deepest. Try that out. So don't devaluate. Don't think that those experiences are only things to recover from. They are things to recover from, but then they're things to use. God created you for a contribution, and God uses all those experiences. Even though God probably didn't want you to have it, God's going to use it to make your contribution more significant in the world to come. Okay, Jeremy's going to turn off my mic here in about 1 minute, so I'm going to go through this really fast. I'm looking where I can jump to because I just realized what time it is. Okay, so I'm gonna jump down here to the last one. Is when this unhealthy reel, often we see ourselves as failures. Life is a failure, and I'm afraid to fail. Job's having fun trying to find the right place on the cues there, so just give him time. But I see ourselves as a failure, and I can't make mistakes. I'm just not allowed to. It's dangerous. The unhealthy ideal, on the other hand, says everything is a success. I always get it right. Nobody actually has that experience. Don't esteem to it. Don't try to be there. It doesn't happen. All right? In the real, the healthy real and the healthy ideal, we are just doing stuff. We show up, in Brené Brown language. We make it onto the floor, and we do stuff. We try, we make mistakes, we seek forgiveness, we learn, and then we try again, not afraid to keep going through that cycle over and over again, because it isn't about getting it right, it's about showing up. It's about shining your light, all right? That's what that's all about, I think. And one word that doesn't fit in this whole conversation about work, and that a word that never appears in the Bible, is the word retirement. All right? Also, I know in like 21st century America, retirement also sort of doesn't exist anymore, does it? But, you know, rest does exist, all right? Rest is important. A Sabbath is important. But if you think about that, Genesis chapter 1, the 6 days of creation, then God rested. You know, do you ever think about like why those ancient Hebrews used the idea of a week? Because the week starts over again, right? So God rested, but then God went back to work, all right? You know, some of us think that, you know, I'm going to get to retirement so I can hang it up. No, God says, I want you to take it down, I want you to dust it off, and I want you to get to work again. I mean, for a lot of us, if you think about this stuff, that how much of our lives do we think, I'm really compromising who I really want to be and what I really want to do in the world because I'm just not free to. I have to make this living, and I, you know, have to do this job, which I'm, and then maybe it's just, you know, raising children restricts me so much, and I have to compromise a lot of my ideals. And when you're retired, you don't have to do that anymore, at least not so much. Think about, when we talk about planning for retirement, don't just think about that financially. That's big. Think about it. When I am freed up to be retired from my job, I am freed up in order to really contribute to this world the way I feel God has called me to. And believe me, by the time you get to that point, your wisdom and your insight, your experience is so great that you're going to know what you could really do in this world. You are not too old at those times. God does not give you 20 or 30 years at the end of your life in order to play golf. God gives you that time so that you can be freed up from what you were so inflexibly tied up with, so that you can do much more ideally, healthy ideally, what you feel called to be about. That's a big thing. Some of you guys are saying, it's a long time off for me. Really a long time for me too. Get ready for it. The last thing on here is the value of your work does not depend on your job or your salary. It is you that has value. You are that third son that comes to the Father. And you may be full of apologies. You may be. There are people here that are really hurting. People that feel like, I'm unemployed. Maybe I'm at home with my kids and I struggle with that inwardly. Maybe I'm doing work I don't want to do. Maybe I'm just full of compromise. I just don't know what to do with my life. Maybe you're a kid, you know, thinking about what you're going to do in life and you don't know where to go with it. You know, your value is not in your job or in the salary you're going to make. It is in you. Your work simply shares the value that is you with other people. So your work is important, but it is you that has the value. That's how God sees you. You are not being measured. If you are, you're being measured by a standard of one, and that one is you. And you are always you. You are always loved. You are of infinite worth. And God is there with you. So I invite you to go and to consider all of your doings today. Think about how God uses you in ways that, you know, if you have a prayer to say, God, show me the difference that I am making. You are making a difference. Show me the difference that I could make. Let that empower you. Let it reconcile with your real, accept it. Be okay with it. And let God show you what the ideal might be. And let God lead you into steps that are along the way. And let us help. That's why we do church. That's why we are church together. I'm going to just turn over to you guys and let your song be our prayer.